Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Patrick and get a free phone. Go to charitymobile.com.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Good morning. Wednesday morning. That's right. Good morning, Wednesday morning.
Welcome. I was waiting for it.
Yeah, it's Wednesday morning. Welcome to the Patrick Madrid Show. The number is 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. A lot of commotion going on up in Canada right now, as you probably have seen. If you paid attention to the secular news, you've seen the truck convoy up there and blocked roads in Ottawa. And there was a threat that they would try to do something like that to protest against the COVID-19 measures at the Super Bowl. But of course, at the Super Bowl, as you saw, if you watched it, nobody was wearing a mask. There were no COVID measures to be seen. And there were no truckers blocking roads or anything like that. But that's been going on for a while. The last week or so, roughly, in Ottawa. And it extends to other parts of that.
You know, I forgot to tell you this. While that was happening, while the Super Bowl, all those thousands of people were all celebrating, having a good time, and all, if you're at the Super Bowl, it's 80% elite, right? Yeah, I mean, it costs some. I mean, there's some people that find themselves in there, and good for you. You somehow got yourself into this place. Well, just down the street from the Super Bowl, there were kids playing outside, playing sports outside that had to be masked while they're playing the sport. Children. Oh, yeah. So down the street from the Super Bowl.
Because the virus will get them, but it won't get the people in the stands.
It was a head scratcher. I don't understand these things.
Yeah, well, that's the weirdness of the whole situation. I saw some prices for Super Bowl tickets, and just as long as we're on the topic, and let me just see if I can find that. The Super Bowl ticket packages that were listed online started, and this if you saw the stands, you saw there were some people that were like up in the stratosphere. They probably had to have oxygen masks that high. But those seats up in the nosebleed section started at $5,800 per person. Actually, it was $5,822.50 per person. And they went up as high as $26,000 for VIP sections.
Yeah, parking, the cheapest that my friend saw was $250 to park. And who knows how far away that was.
$250,000 was the most expensive price for a ticket. That was at a VIP suite. Now, I'm not, everyone's got to make a buck. Mm-hmm. But to your point, I think the average Joe probably wasn't able to shell out, even for the nosebleed section, probably not able to shell out $6,000, including parking.
I couldn't afford the parking.
Yeah, for a football. Right. But what a football game. And of course, you could watch it at home, so it's great. But you're right. So there was the obligatory, what's the word I want to use here, hypocrisy?
Yeah,
from the elites in not wearing their masks when the school kids do. But that's not where I was going with this.
I know. I didn't mean to derail you there. We hadn't talked about it, and you brought it up, and it jumped to the front of my mind. I was like, yeah, man, that drives me crazy.
Mm-hmm.
All right. On with the show.
Yeah, no, I understand. And it drives a lot of people crazy. So that's part of what's going on, a big part of what's going on in Canada right now, people who are protesting. And it's really, very... clear the people on the other side who hate these truckers. They absolutely scorn them. They hate them. They want them gone. They want them arrested. They want them prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law, et cetera, et cetera. So it's exposing the kind of divisions that we're living with nowadays that are very much COVID related. But even in Canada, unlike California, let's say, even in Canada, they're starting to wake up and realize that this has got to end. The COVID insanity, the restrictions and such have to end. So here we have some audio from the Premier of Ontario, which would be the equivalent of a governor in this country. His name is Doug Ford, And he's talking about, among other things, he's talking about the failure of the vaccine passport program in Canada, or at least in his province, and how the whole thing is just sort of collapsing, and he wants to get on with normal life. And rather than paraphrase what he said, here's him in his own words.
You know, you can go to Costco, you can go to Walmart, you can go shopping. You know, you don't know if the person has a shot beside you or not, but we also know that it doesn't matter if you have one shot or 10 shots, you can catch COVID. See, the Prime Minister has triple shots, and I know hundreds of people with three shots that caught COVID. We just have to be careful. We've got to always make sure we wash our hands and move forward. But Colin, we can't stay in this position forever. We got to learn to live with this and get on with our lives. I bet if I asked every single person in this room, do you want these damn masks or do you want them off? They want them off. They want to get back to normal. They want to be able to go for dinner with their families. And there's every single person, including myself, knows people that are unvaccinated. You know, sure, there's the rebel rousers. And then there's just hardworking people that just don't believe in it. And that's their choice. This is about, again, a democracy and freedoms and liberties. And I hate, as a government, telling anyone what to do. We just got to get moving forward and get out of this and protect the jobs. You know, I think a lot of people, Colin, probably yourself too, everyone's done with this. Like, we are done with it. Let's start moving on and cautiously. And, you know, we've followed the rules, all of us, like 90% of us, for over 2 years. The world's done with it. So let's just move forward.
Yeah, so that's the premier of the province of Ontario. And this, I think, was at a press conference yesterday, if I'm not mistaken. Now, this coincides, and it's interesting to kind of take note of our neighbor to the north and what's going on there, because in some ways, they have been more extreme than some of the most extreme, extravagant precautions that were taken in this country. But yet, they're also, just like anywhere else, I mean, they're people like you and I, and they want to get back to normal. So there was a poll that was taken by Maru, which is, let me read you Maru's description. Maru is the world-leading CX and insights software and advisory services company, and they are involved in data and big data and in that world, and they did a survey. And the survey, surveying public opinion in Canada, I have it in front of me, and we'll get a link to it posted for you. It's on the question of what is the public's opinion, in Canada, with regard to relaxing restrictions. And here are some excerpts from the study. The results of a national survey released today by Maru Public Opinion finds that as federal and provincial leaders seemingly race to lower or eliminate societal restrictions to prevent the spread of the impact of COVID, and possibly as a concession to protesters, this is referring to the truckers, who are demanding such over the past 3 weeks, all things considered, Unless their local hospitals and ICUs are affected by a sudden surge that compromises the care for people, two-thirds or 64% of Canadians say it's time to drop the restrictions imposed on Canadians because of COVID and that we should start to live with the virus. A majority, 56% of Canadians, agree that it's time to stop pressuring those who refuse to get vaccinated. If they haven't by now, they won't. And all it's doing is creating a backlash that is worse than living with them in our communities. And significant minority, 45% of Canadians, believe that it's time for the chief medical officers and health officials to stand back and be less involved in deciding what's best for our society. So here's some key findings. Canadians have had to deal with the impact of COVID-19 for 2 years, just like the rest of us. Two-thirds, 64%, say it's time to drop the restrictions and get on with your lives, even though COVID is around. This view is most likely to be held by those living in Quebec, 71%, followed by Alberta, 65%, Ontario, 65%. Now, maybe these provinces are unfamiliar to you, so it may not click as to why these percentages might be different. But if you want to see the statistics for Canada, you can check it out on this PDF. Two-thirds of Canadians, this is 63%, say it's time to stop all restrictions, masks, mandates, etc. A majority, 56% of Canadians, agree that it's time to stop pressuring those who refuse to get vaccinated. Okay, this is encouraging because it seems as though public opinion is now moving in the direction of trying to find a way beyond these divisions. A majority, 53% of Canadians, believe it should be left up to them to determine what precautions they want to take. So a majority of this survey sample, 53%, say they should get to determine what precautions they want to take to protect themselves and not have to be told by the government or healthcare officials where to go or what to do. Canadians are split, about 50-50 roughly, over the view that Canada is being left behind as other countries open up and move forward. So roughly half the country says, why is everyone else opening up? Why is England opening up? Why are so many countries in Europe opening up, and most of the United States with, you know, the holdouts like California and other places? But why is everyone else getting to open up and we can't? But 50% of the Canadian people are saying the opposite. We don't want to go that fast. We don't want to open up yet. And again, the statistics bear this out as you look at the way the questions were asked. And then the last major thing is a significant minority, 45%, believe that it's time for the chief medical officers and health officials to stand back and leave people alone. And just, you know, stop the hectoring, stop all the, you know, all the guidance. Boy, do I hate that word now. I've heard that word too many times in the last 2 years. One interesting finding is that as a general finding, they say women, Cyrus, I don't know what you make of this, but I find this interesting. In this survey of Canadians, women are more likely than men to want restrictions to be kept in place. And that's by 6 percentage points more than the men who were surveyed wanting to have the restrictions kept in place. It also tracks with people who have higher incomes, which they list as $100,000 per year. Now, these are Canadian dollars, of course, but $100,000 per year, and also those with more education, and also those who are older, 55 and older, and especially women, by 6 percentage points, they're more interested in keeping. They want the restrictions kept rather than lifted. I find that mindset hard to understand.
Yeah, that is news to me. I don't get it. Does it say anything in there about all of the people that have lost their jobs and lost wages and have been ostracized because they chose not to get vaccinated? And now these big places of business, these millionaires are mm-hmm. saying, okay, let's get back to normal. Well, what about all of the people that their normal's gone because they didn't want to play this game?
Yeah, like if you work for T-Mobile and you're not vaccinated, you're getting fired. So, I mean, people like that, right? And other people.
That's exactly what I mean, yeah.
No, the survey doesn't talk about that per se. And it's a PDF. It's available. Cyrus probably has already posted it. So you can check it out for yourself. Now, again, granted, it's Canada, but Canada is our near neighbor. And there are many similarities between Canada and the United States. So it's interesting to see just what's going on in the mindsets of the people just to the north of us. Now, there's some other some details here. The Canadian officials, in the midst of the trucker revolt, which I thought went on for the last 2 weeks, apparently it's been 3 weeks in the making. This, according to CNN, they're moving to block funding of the protests against COVID-19 rules. They have a bunch of new financial restrictions in place. So CNN says the Canadian government aims to cut off financial support for protesters staging costly blockades at the U.S. border crossings over COVID-19 measures by invoking for the first time ever the country's Emergencies Act. Minister of Finance, Chrystia Freeland, she said, this is about following the money. This is about stopping the financing of these illegal blockades. They're going to go after those who are funding the protests. So you don't even have to be part of the protests if you are funding it, if you made a donation online, for example, they're looking at coming after you. They say that these protests have taken a $500 million daily toll at the border crossings. Even with traffic restored after a week-long blockade of the vital Ambassador Bridge between Ontario and Michigan, protesters are still obstructing crossings, and they give a bunch of other places where they're doing this. Financial institutions will now have the power to freeze your personal or corporate accounts if they believe you are using them to fund these protests. The government is also taking action on crowdfunding sites and payment service providers that they use.
What do you think would have happened if they did this for the Black Lives Matter riots? I mean, here we...
They wouldn't.
Unless I'm mistaken, these are peaceful protests in Canada, right? They're protests.
Well,
But they're...
I have noticed, as far as I'm aware, yes, I'm not aware of any violence, but I have noticed that there's a sort of frantic search for anything that might suggest that these people are either, the truckers that is, that they're either violent or that they are prone to violence, because every so often I'll see, oh, look, we found some guns, or oh, look, yes, we found some... They're not being used, as far as I'm aware. There hasn't been any outbreak of violence, but they're trying really hard to paint them as white supremacists and all of the above, all of the pejoratives that are common nowadays that the left tends to throw.
So it's
at
a
people.
Far cry from people taking over, multiple blocks of a major city for weeks on end.
Oh, that's different.
Or burning buildings, or taking over government buildings.
That's okay. See, that's okay.
And right, but imagine if the crowdfunding that was going on for those people, if mm-hmm. the government said, no, we're taking that and we're gonna give it to charities of our own choice,
which is what Canada is doing. And we're not only going to do that, we're also going to come after you if you made a donation.
Exactly.
Even right. If you just sat on your couch and watched it on TV, if you sent in $50 on GoFundMe, they're going to come after you. They haven't revealed exactly what that's going to be. But yeah, I mean, obviously, the double standard is glaring. And the things that they're putting in place to try to, harass these people. And Prime Minister Trudeau, wildly divisive, wildly unpopular with much of Canada. He's been at the forefront of this. And now it's all being framed in terms of this is costing our country a lot of money. And I don't doubt that. I'm sure it's true. But there is a double standard, to be sure, when it comes to clogging intersections and destroying property and torching buildings and, like you said, Cyrus, occupying whole square blocks of cities like Seattle and Portland and other places, Minneapolis. That's okay if the cause is acceptable to the people in power. If the cause isn't acceptable to the people in power, then, boy, howdy, they're going to come after you. And we're seeing that in the case of Canada. So whether people agree or disagree with what the truckers are doing, and I recognize that there are plenty of people who say that's wrong, they shouldn't do that. Fair enough. I'm not here to argue one way or the other, just to point out what's going on and to make note of some of these double standards. That's all. Why don't we take a break? We have phone calls waiting. I also, when we come back, I'm going to share with you some news about the new billionaires who have become billionaires because of COVID-19. Not everybody lost their job, Cyrus. Some people did quite well in COVID, and I'll tell you who they are as well.
I have a guess.
Well, I'm not one of them. I'm a lowly radio host. I love my job. And I'll be right back. Yeah. Bad boys, what you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you? Bad boys, bad boys.
We've been waiting for a long time.
Compelling insights.
Yes, we've been waiting for a long, long time.
Unpredictable conversations.
We've been waiting for a long time.
Encouragement for your day.
We ain't gonna wait no more. We're getting ready to rock and roll.
It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
The boys are back in town.
All right. I guess the boys being Jim, Cyrus, and Patrick. Is that who they're referring to?
That is it, yeah.
All right. I like it. Okay, so real quick before we go to the phones, COVID vaccine profits meant 9 new pharma billionaires. This is from CNN. At least 9 new billionaires. Now, I have nothing against billionaires. Please understand me. I'm not unhappy that at least 9 new people are billionaires. I mean, I hope that they use the money wisely, but I have nothing against people making a ton of money if that's how God blesses them. But remember when the mantra was, at first it was 15 days to flatten the curve, and then herd immunity.
I remember that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was over 2 years ago now.
And the social distancing, we did all those things. And then it was like, okay, listen, just get this vaccine, and you're good to go. And life can get back to normal, at least for you. Now, the other people who don't get it, that's a different story. But you remember when the messaging was, get the vaccine, and you're good to go. Then the messaging was, well, you got to have a second one. Of course, that was sort of, known ahead of time. And then there was the booster. And then it was, well, okay, if you get the vaccine, you can still get COVID forget all that other stuff that we said about herd immunity. And if, you know, once enough people are vaccinated, you don't have to worry about it. But forget about all that stuff, because you're still going to get COVID and you're going to still be able to give COVID to other people. And remember how we kind of went through all those iterations and things changed one after the other? Well, the one common thing in all of that was the vaccination. And so Pfizer, for example, registered $36.8 billion of sales just in 2021. That makes it the top-selling pharmaceutical product ever in a single year by a gigantic margin. Humira is the next highest with $20.7 billion reported in 2021. And there are others. The Wall Street Journal has a breakdown of this. CNN, for their part, they say that the top new billionaires, or nine new billionaires, rather, who have gotten to this level, this is from the Forbes Rich List, are the CEOs. I'm sensing a pattern here. The CEO of Moderna, the CEO of BioNTech, which produced the Pfizer vaccine. Both of these CEOs are now worth about $4 billion. Senior executives from China's CanSino Biologics, who were early investors in Moderna, have become billionaires, at least on paper. Moderna's share price gained more than 700% since February of 2020. Why didn't I think about buying stock in Moderna in 2020? What a rookie mistake.
Mm-hmm.
Could you imagine if you had a stock that went up 700% in 2 years? So if you're interested, you know, if you're interested in how the last year or so of the vaccination programs, how it enriched both the companies, which is understandable. I mean, you sell product, you're going to make money. And it enriched people who were involved with it. It is striking to note that some people did extremely well, financially speaking, with the vaccinations, while other people are left, you know, stranded on the side of the road because businesses shut down or they got fired because they didn't get vaccinated, etc. So that's worth looking at. 888-914-9149. Yeah, any thoughts on that, Cyrus, before we proceed?
Yeah, I can't help but as I go through the news feeds on Twitter and Facebook and the people that have been pushing and pushing and pushing harder than anybody is the far left. They've been, and it's like, I went to a...
Which is most of the media.
Which is...
Most of the media is far left.
Fair enough. I went to a liberal arts college. I went to the University of Oregon, and so I know what the left is, and I would even have considered myself a left at one point.
Until you met me.
They're so far left now, they've left me behind.
Yeah.
But... When I was in college, and the left, the last people the left would ever support were big government and pharmaceutical companies.
Big companies, yeah.
And right, and now that's what they are pushing, and that's what mm-hmm. they put all of their belief into. Mm-hmm. And it's like, what happened? What happened to you guys? And now they go so far as, I mean, they're just bonkers.
Well, it used to be, I'm old enough to remember when it seemed to me that the left was always associating itself with free speech rights and, hey, we can burn a flag if we want to burn a flag and you can't stop us because it's free speech. Hey, we can demonstrate, we can chant slogans, we can take over university president's offices, we can have sit-ins.
That's right. That's what people fought for, was for our right to do those things.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And it was always seemingly associated with those on the left, but it's completely reversed now. And the people on the left are infuriated that people who are conservative are doing the very same thing, wanting to protest, wanting to have their voices heard. They're infuriated. People like Justin Trudeau are stomping on them as hard as they can, because I guess they're okay with protests as long as it's a protest about something that they agree with.
Boy, isn't it?
If anyone else should dare to protest and exercise the same right, they get stomped on.
It's exactly right. You are 100% correct.
100%. Let's go to some phone calls. Let's go to Matt in Green Bay. Good morning, Matt. Welcome.
Morning, guys. Thanks for your perspective on some of this stuff. I appreciate some of the topics you guys
Thank
cover.
You.
I was just laughing at you guys right there, too. But I'm going to pivot to the topic a little bit here. And yesterday's, a lot of calls were on baptism yesterday with the new, you know, the news down in Arizona. It had me thinking, I was reflecting on it, if I've ever been in a situation where an emergency was present, kind of like you mentioned once, if an emergency is present, you know, lay people have the power, quote unquote, to baptize somebody if they want to. The one situation that I thought of that might apply to me and a lot of other people are my last daughter was born, you know, via C-section, and after she was delivered, she wasn't, you know, she was having difficulty breathing on her own. She never cried. And the only way that they could keep her oxygen up was on, you know, if she was on like an oxygen mask. And as soon as they would take that oxygen mask off, her levels would just go down over and over. So after about, I don't know, 10 minutes of that, they're like, I think we should take her to the NICU so that we can give her proper treatment. Is that a situation where I should just say, okay, well, hold off before you guys bring her. Let me baptize her real quick.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's a classic scenario. And because the little baby's in distress and you don't know which way it's going to go and the medical people are concerned, absolutely, you know, you can say, please pause for a minute. Can I have a cup of water? And then you baptize her then and there. That would be the kind of emergency situation where the church says, yes, go ahead and do it. Now, let's say your baby were born completely without any distress and she and mom are doing great and you're just antsy because you don't know what could happen, but there's no imminent danger, there are no problems. That would not be a situation where you should baptize your baby. But in a case like this where it's dicey and risky and there's the potential that the baby could die suddenly, absolutely baptize the baby.
Yeah, some of your topics have made me think about that, where I feel like, you know, if had something turned, so everything turned out, you know, just fine for my daughter, but I'm like, had things turned south, I'm thinking about it now, like I would feel like I missed an opportunity where I should have acted. So that's good to know. And then a follow-up on that is, like, so let's say I would have baptized her in that situation. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, 3 days in the NICU, she's fine. Then we all go home. What would you need to do? Yeah, because I would still want to have, I feel like I still would want to have a priest baptize her and still have the ceremony and still have the get-together.
Well, no, let me clarify that point. Because of what baptism does, it's Jesus working in the sacrament, and it confers an indelible character on the soul. He uses the analogy of a signet ring of a king who would press the signet ring into hot wax on the parchment of his royal decree so that the image from his ring is now present in the wax when it dries, and that's a symbol of his authority. And this document bears his authority, even though the king is not there when the document is delivered. So St. Thomas, thinking of it along those lines, he talks about how baptism, because of this imprint, this indelible once-for-all imprint of Christ on the soul, excuse me, that it's irrepeatable. So there is no question about getting rebaptized, because it wouldn't do anything. It wouldn't be valid. And it would be superfluous. So the thing to do in that case, Matt, would be to let your parish priest know, hey, here was the situation, emergency, I baptized the baby. Here's how I baptized the baby, using water and with this formula. And then the priest would say, okay, great, valid baptism. There were other people there too who saw it. And then they would make a baptismal record card for your daughter, and it would be on file at the parish. And then it would say that you baptized your daughter on such and such a date, and it would be confirmed by the parish, by the priest, so that when she gets older, then it's time to receive her sacrament of confirmation, for example, or to get married at a later date. Well, that baptismal certificate would be necessary to show that she had received her baptism validly. Great question, Matt, and I'm happy to know that your little daughter was safe and sound. Thank you. How about Dan now in Jasper, Missouri? Good morning, Dan.
Good morning. So over the last couple months, our local parish priest, during the consecration, after saying, you know, do this in memory of me, as he raises the host and again with the precious blood, he says, together we say, Jesus, I love you and I trust in you, three times. And I'm wondering if this is, you know, problematic, or if this is, you know, in any way invalidates the sacrament.
Okay, so it doesn't invalidate it, that's for sure, because in order for a sacrament to be invalid, there must either be, in this case with the Eucharist, must either be invalid matter, so something other than unleavened wheat bread and grape wine, or it would have to be an invalid form in which he didn't say the words of consecration, or he said something different from the words of consecration, or it would be invalid if he were not a validly ordained priest, in which case it would just be a pantomime of Mass. He wouldn't be able to actually confect the sacrament. So those would be the issues that would govern the validity of the sacrament. The other category is what's called laicity, which is a fancy word meaning like the legality of it. Now, that would be something that a canon lawyer would be able to, you know, adjudicate in a more strict sense. But I would say that it would be illicit for him to do that for the following reason. The priest is supposed to do what the sacramental books say, the liturgical books say, say this, do this. So certain gestures that the priest is supposed to make at certain times, there are certain things he says out loud, some things he says quietly, for example, during the offertory. And those are things that in terms of the licitness of how the priest celebrates Mass, he's obligated to follow those rubrics. The priest is able to say anything he wants in his own heart and mind when he's elevating the host. And I've even wondered at times, I wonder what the priest is saying or thinking to himself as he's gazing upon Jesus in the Holy Eucharist. Now, it's not for me to know, but the priest is free, just like you are, to say anything in your heart out of love for Jesus. And you can say, my Lord and my God. You can say, Jesus, I trust in you. You can say anything you want. And the church encourages that. But where it's crossing the line, it seems to me at least, is he's forcing this sort of private devotion upon everyone else. Now, there's nothing wrong with saying, Jesus, I trust in you. There's nothing wrong with that. It's a good thing, if nothing else. But the problem, as I see it, would be that it's not obligatory that people say that. It's not something that the church says to the priest, okay, now lead the people in saying, Jesus, I trust in you three times. He's freelancing here. And he's adding his own personal piety, as good as it is, in a way that's not appropriate because it's not called for by the liturgical books. So if I were having a cup of coffee and I would say, well, you know, this is a very nice thing to say, and you could encourage during the homily, for example, hey, everybody, when you receive Holy Communion, one nice thing that you could do is to say, Jesus, I trust in you three times quietly or in the silence of your own heart. But it goes beyond what it would be helpful for him now to impose that on everybody else, because that's what he likes to say. You see the distinction there?
I do. I mean, do I have any, you know, sort of duty, I guess, to, you know, let him know maybe that he shouldn't be doing that, or,
well,
you know, should I just kind of let well enough alone, or what?
You know, there's a time and a place for everything, and I've learned the hard way sometimes that there's a time not to try to rattle somebody's cage. But if it's something that is, if it's not distracting, if it's you know, if it's intruding in a way that is problematic for everybody, then you could gently express your opinion, maybe in an email. You could say something face to face if you know the priest well. Often, face-to-face encounters like this tend to go south pretty quickly because people get defensive and angry. So in my experience, sending an email just saying, I really appreciate how reverently you celebrate Mass, but I find it very distracting, and I know other people do as well, when you make people say this beautiful prayer, but this is a time for people to say whatever they want, so could you please stop doing that? That may or may not get a change, but you wouldn't be committing a sin if you just grinned and bore it, if you just said, well, I'm not going to rock the boat and say anything. But I have a feeling that other people are probably feeling just like you are, Dan, if I had to guess.
Yeah, I haven't heard anyone else complain about it, but just my wife and I have talked about how it's distracting. So
it's irksome. Yeah, it's unnecessary. And this is an example where freelancing causes problems. This is why the church in her wisdom has in the liturgical books certain prayers a certain way. It's not just because this is how we've always done it, but this is the, if you can use this terminology, sort of the fine-tuning over 2,000 years of these beautiful prayers. And that's why the liturgy is wonderful as it is without freelancing and embroideries and adding personal things to it. Those are really unnecessary.
All right. Well, thank you, Patrick.
Yeah, thank you, Dan. I appreciate it. I think we'll take a break, and then we'll come straight back to your phone calls. 888-914-9149 is the number to call. Those of you who are holding, please be patient. I will come to you as quickly as possible. This is the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. And I hate this song, Cyrus. I hate this song. Thanks a lot.
Am I rocking the boat?
Yeah, this was the Hughes Corporation. And I hated this song from the very beginning. Sorry to say, but we'll be right back. With better music. Ever since our voyage of love began.
Real life solutions you can believe in. The Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
We're going to California. We're going to South Dakota and Texas and New York and Texas and New York.
Much better, Cyrus. Much better.
You asked for a better song. Yeah. I delivered.
You did. Well done. And Washington. Good job. Okay, 888-914-9149 is the number. Let's go to Mark in Houston. Hello, Mark.
Hey, I think I have a good question for you here. I was just listening to you guys, and you were kind of saying how the left was all censorship, and now was all free speech. Now they're all censorship. And I recall a letter that I believe Benedict, or when he was Pope, Ratzinger, wrote to John Paul II that was talking about the tyranny of relativism. And he said it would begin with them, I'm paraphrasing, but shouting from the roofs, tolerance, tolerance. And in the end, they would be the most intolerant of all. And it just seemed real prophetic. I remember, I was wondering if you're familiar with that letter or whatever. You know I'm going with that?
I think so. Yeah, I think I do, Mark. My perception is that you may be confusing that with the sermon that Pope Benedict, well, then Cardinal Ratzinger, preached during the conclave, or at the beginning of the conclave, that elected him as Pope Benedict XVI. So this is back in 2005. And so he, being the dean of the College of Cardinals, he was the main celebrant at this Mass. So Pope John Paul II had already died. And in this sermon, he preached about what he called the dictatorship of relativism.
And
So in that sermon, you can easily find it online. So you would look for Cardinal Ratzinger's sermon, Dictatorship of Relativism. And, you know, it's in 2005. And you'll find it, and you could read the whole thing in context. But I think that might be what you're thinking of. And Pope John Paul had then already died.
Okay. That was just, I just thought I had such a parallel to what y'all were talking about.
Indeed. Yeah. And it was the same Cardinal Ratzinger who became Pope Benedict XVI, who asked more than once, many times, for prayers. And he said, very strikingly, in one way, he says, please pray for me that I will not run away for fear of the wolves. And it was almost like he was dropping some clues in some of the things he was saying at that time about there being people, maybe in the Curia, maybe in the College of Cardinals, maybe in the bishops in general. He referred to them obliquely, without naming any of them. He referred to them as wolves, and he asked for prayer so that he would have the courage to deal with that. I have always found that mysterious, and I've wondered, what did he have in mind exactly about that? But yeah. I guess I'll never have a chance
to ask.
Well,
I really appreciate your show and everything.
Thank you, Mark. I appreciate that. Thanks for saying so, and thanks for the call. 888-914-9149. How about Paul now in Tampa? Hi, Paul.
Hey, Patrick. I was just wondering, when I heard you talk about the news item where people who are crowdfunding for the truckers in Canada had their assets frozen, so to speak, what's really the substantive difference between crowdfunding somebody who's speaking out about a vaccination and maybe donating to a Catholic radio network that the government may deem to be subversive in its messaging? It kind of struck me right there when I heard that. I thought, man, this is just by their fiat. What's acceptable, what's not, when you can donate, when you can't.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. So obviously, the difference is the goal of the funding. So in the case of the truckers, they're protesting. They want an end to the mandates. And so those who agree with them and want to support that, it's a kind of a socio-political cause. Whereas if you're making a donation to Relevant Radio, it's not a socio-political cause, rather it's a religious issue. It's a faith issue. And I certainly don't know what the laws are like in Canada, and I'm not even sure if I know what the laws are like here in these United States as to whether that difference between the two things would safeguard religious institutions in a way that, what's the word I want here? These kinds of protests that sort of come up out of nowhere, spontaneous types of ad hoc protests from a political standpoint might not have the kind of protections under the law that churches would have or religious institutions. So that's a question I would have to look into personally. But I see your point. In other words, if any given government in power at a given time were to decide that that government didn't like the message of Relevant Radio, well, governments can do what governments can do. So yeah. Please God that never happens, but I suppose in theory it could happen. Yeah. I have a feeling that, Paul, if Relevant Radio were on stations around Canada, given as far left-wing and radical as it is, that there would be problems. So I'm just grateful that people in Canada can listen to Relevant Radio on the Relevant Radio app no matter where they are. And those who live on the other side of the border near enough to one of our stations that they can listen as well, that's nice. But I think it would be very different for Relevant Radio if we were in Canada. Just conjecture on my part.
That's a good point. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it, Paul. Let's go to Julie now in Chandler, Arizona. Hi, Julie.
Hi there.
Hi, you're on the air.
Okay, I had a question. I have not been able to find any record in the news media of what Bernie Sanders thinks about all the vaccine mandates and the big pharma. And I was wondering if you had any information on that.
I don't, but I mean, I don't mean to be flippant, but I couldn't care less what Bernie Sanders thinks about Big Pharma, honestly. I'm not being flippant. I'm not trying to be disrespectful to you, Julie, but what value would there be in knowing what he thinks about this?
Well, because he's kind of the, you know, one of the main leaders of the left who is against Big Pharma, and now it's the left is promoting the vaccine mandates, which benefits Big Pharma. So I was just curious, and I haven't seen him or heard anything of his input.
Yeah, that's true. He sort of disappeared for a while. Well, I know one thing, that on the campaign trail for the last two presidential election cycles, when he has been a candidate for the Democratic nomination, he, for the longest time, in his stump speech, he would talk about the problem with millionaires and billionaires. And eventually he became a millionaire, owning multiple homes and, you know, socking away quite a bit of money. So he sort of quietly changed his stump speech to no longer include millionaires. So he wasn't railing against the millionaires and billionaires. He just started railing against the billionaires. I suppose one wonders if he did well on the stock for Moderna, and if he became a billionaire, would he just drop that part of his stump speech? I don't know. But we haven't heard much from him in a while. Honestly, I couldn't care less what he thinks about anything, really. But I just don't know. I've never really looked into it.
Okay. I just remember because one of his big, like the really far left, like farther left than Joe Biden, the big, you know, thing was like anti-big business, anti-big pharma and all that stuff. And just to your point of that, the whole COVID and vaccine mandate is benefiting certain people and hurting other people. I just wondered what the far left, or maybe Cyrus, because he went to the far left liberal arts college.
Cyrus, he sees all, he knows all. So yeah. In your last conversation with Bernie Sanders, Cyrus, what did he say about this issue?
The last time I talked to Bernie, he said that vaccines should be free. But then he spent the rest of the time talking about how gas prices are at the highest level they've been in 7 years, while at the same time, ExxonMobil, Chevron, Shell, BP, have made $25 billion in profits in the last quarter. So the guy might not be right all the time, but he's not wrong all the time either.
I am asking you once again. That's one of his classic lines. Yeah, Julie, I guess I don't know. I don't think, I think a little Googling can get you what you're looking for. I just haven't thought about it. I didn't roll out of bed this morning thinking, I wonder what Bernie Sanders thinks about this issue.
You didn't have your morning coffee with Bernie?
Huh. No, never have. What's that, Julie?
I'm sorry. I was wondering if Sanders has some free time, if he could make one of those audio loops like he did with Jen Psaki with the Circle Back, if he could make one of those all the times that Bernie Sanders talked about how evil Big Pharma is.
It doesn't take much to egg Cyrus on.
Or entertain me.
Like that, or to entertain you, yeah. Well, Julie, thank you. That's a fascinating question. I do not know the answer to it. Nor does Cyrus. Believe it or not. 888-914-914.
Believe it or not.
He knows all. He sees all. Cyrus, you're not a vegetarian, are you? I think I know the answer to this question because we've been out to eat before. And I think I have seen.
Yeah, you might meat. Be. My wife is now menu. A vegetarian, which pretty much makes me a vegetarian. No, I'm kidding. That was true at one point. It is not anymore.
So you're not a vegetarian.
I am not. When I was very left, you know, back those college days, I was a vegetarian.
The left.
Not anymore.
So there is a what's called a supercut of wokeness.
Oh, this is great. Yes.
Yeah, this is from. This is from Twitter, right?
Yeah,
lips of TikTok.
If you want to go down a rabbit hole of nonsense, lips of TikTok.
So give me 90 seconds of this supercut of wokeness. And now this is on the topic of reasons not to eat meat.
And this is it. I think this is a professor, and she's speaking at a university. So this is if you're paying for your kids to go to university, this could be what they're learning.
All right.
I believe we should move beyond all meat. The assumption that the best protein comes from corpses is a racist belief. How do you know the animal would have picked you to feed off their corpse?
Can you pause for a second? Pause. Okay. She just said that, again, I've heard this like 10 times already, but every time I stop at this point, eating meat is racist.
That is animals, what she said. That
animals aren't a race. They don't have, there's not like a race of cows or a race of chickens. They're species. But notice how she pivots completely in an incoherent way that eating meat is racist.
Well, there's white meat and dark meat.
She pivots completely into this stuff about how do you know that the animal would have chosen you to eat it? No animal's going to choose anybody to eat it. Animal's whole thing is stay alive. This is incoherent from the beginning. Let's play it from the beginning just to get the full effect.
Yeah, and okay, everybody just take out your brains for a second, put them on the shelf so you can, and just to begin to understand what this lady's trying to say.
I believe we should move beyond all meat. The assumption that the best protein comes from corpses is a racist belief. How do you know the animal would have picked you to feed off their corpse? 21st century animal eating requires our complicity in a new colonialism. These events especially affect girls and young women. Your hamburger comes with a dose of misogyny.
Okay, I want to play that again. That's my favorite one.
Oh, but she didn't define girls.
This is real.
And she didn't define women. So that could mean anything.
Yeah. Whoa. Good point. All right, here we go.
Your hamburger comes with a dose of misogyny. Popular culture is flooded with references to sexy cows, sexy pigs, sexy chickens, sexy fishes.
Pause.
Sexy fishes.
Has anyone on planet Earth ever heard or seen anything that she just said about animals ever in the history of mankind? The answer is no.
Sexy fishes.
All right. So she's lecturing students, apparently, in a classroom. Let's continue. I don't know if I can take it, but how much more do we have? Another 40 seconds?
Oh, maybe? Let's keep going.
All right.
Sexy cows, sexy pigs, sexy chickens, sexy fishes, who all just want to have fun. Meat eating is also one of the ways gender-based structures of oppression are perpetuated. Masculinity, a construct of the gender binary facing constant destabilization, feels always under threat, and eating animals is its protection racket. White supremacists weaponized it, eating meat, eggs, and dairy, and the baiting of liberal men as so-called soy boys are all part of the neo-Nazi messaging. To say you care about animals is considered a sign of weakness in a world still committed to the gender binary. Meat eaters like anti-abortionists have forgotten that one quality of non-existence is not having awareness about existence. When all else fails, meat eaters assert that animals are not our equals. I heard all your laughter. I know some of these must be new ideas, or you think they're fringe or whatever. Our whiteness is part of the problem of meat eating.
There are people who believe that, amazingly. I'm not one of them, if you probably guessed by now. I'll be back with more, including your phone calls, right after this. Quick time out. Please stay right there.
Your hamburger comes with a dose of misogyny. Oh.